a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
25 inches on my golf cart rims. Going Bubba Long, better watch out, kids. Hitting so hard, coming out my shoes. Ain't afraid to cry, boo-hoo, hootie-hoo. Oh, how the birdies love me, love me, love me.
Almonds in my bag, cause they yummy to my tummy.
Pictures in my backswing, baby, that ain't funny.
Hey, when does the PGA Tour cut Rory McIlroy?
What do you mean?
Like, let him go? Send him on his way. He can go play in some.
He's one of the most popular players out there on the PGA Tour. So, but I think the tour is quite happy to have him. In fact, he thinks he's the chair of the Players Committee this year. So,
you know, we talked about awkward moments in radio. That's up there.
Man,
it's like top 10.
I thought BT knew me better. I was hoping he did.
Your hatred of Rory McIlroy.
Well, yeah, just and my sarcasm.
Brian Taylor joins us now.
Not
from
that,
Real Golf Radio.
Not that I didn't kind of feel that way.
Well, I mean, I could understand being on the receiving end of that phone call. Be like, what the hell is this guy talking about? Hi, BT.
What's up, BT?
Sorry, that was sarcasm, was it? Yeah, I was way off. Wow.
What do you mean?
It's one of my favorite moments, man. BT, what'd you think of this PGA Championship?
You know what? This was Lloyd and I were just talking about this before it came on. It was one of those where I fell asleep for about 2 hours, and then I woke up, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait, we got a tournament?
Yep.
It went from really kind of a snoozer to – and then there was a point in the middle where I was like, oh, my gosh, what am I watching here? Like, I know there's 20 PGA club professionals that are playing, but these guys are the leaders, and they're playing like that. I mean, they were missing shots. It was almost like, who wants to lose this the most, not who wants to win this? Meanwhile, JT's just kind of plodding along, and then it kind of came to a head there at the end. But the way it finished, I thought it was exciting for a three-hole playoff. It's the first one we've had a three-hole aggregate playoff since was like 2011 when Jason Duffner and Keegan Bradley played. So I was a little unsure if I'm like, man, this is going to be another hour of TV time. It better be good, and it was great. I thought the playoff actually was really, really, really good. So. Overall, I think it salvaged it, but I thought it was on life support for a bit.
Brian Taylor, Real Golf Radio, right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. You hear it every Saturday morning. All right, so I guess we expect more out of golfers when you've got a one-shot lead and you're going into 18 and you think, all right, you just got to lay up, get your par, and cash that big check and go down in history as a PGA champion. Talk us through where that hole really, really went wrong for him.
Yeah, Mito Pereira. I mean, the guy's a rookie. He won three times on the Corn Ferry Tour last year, so this is somebody that knows how to win. That's a big thing, right? Of all the things that have happened in golf, the development and evolution, I should say, of the Corn Ferry Tour, previously the Nationwide, previously Web.com, whatever, that feeder system has really produced players that jump out on the PGA Tour right away ready to win. And so I do like that aspect. So here's Mito Pereira. He admitted afterwards that he was nervous from the first tee, and he looked it. But I thought he handled himself quite well. And then here he is, one shot lead. And you would think, and this is actually kind of good for the viewer, because you would think one shot lead with, you know, coming up the 18th, all you got to do is make par and you're hoisting the trophy and you're into, you know, golf immortality. And he hits it in the water off the tee, makes double, doesn't even make the playoffs. So the next time somebody's out there and they got a one shot lead and they just rip it down the middle of the fairway, knock it on the green and two putt for the win, and you go, well, that's just easy. It'll kind of, you think back to Mito and think, okay, you know what? That actually is, that's clutching up. That's really tough. JT was asked about it afterwards. How much of it was the difficulty of the golf course versus the challenge mentally of winning a golf tournament and winning a major golf tournament? And he said if he had to rank it, he'd probably go 80-20 difficulty of the golf course, which Southern Hills did play difficult all week. So, but I'll tell you what, man, when Pereira got up there with that one-shot lead and he made that sod off, I think he was trying to hit some little stinger cut, but it looked like golfing the round, you know, like taking your kids to golf day. I mean, it was I literally about fell off the chair. I was like, what in the world was that? And it goes in the water, and I feel bad for the guy. But you know what? Hats off to Zalatoris for keeping it together because he could have melted. Hats off to JT for, you know, just staying in it when it didn't look like he had a chance.
What was it, BT? Was it 16th or 17th when Mito had like a 12 or 13 foot that would have put him two up? And pretty, was it 17? And a 12-foot putt, and it just barely missed maybe a quarter of an inch.
Yeah, for birdie, right?
Yes.
And he made it for par. He parred 70,
I got to imagine that's going to be a learning moment where he'll go back and look at that. Not that he could have completely change things, but if he sinks that, it takes all the pressure off on 18,
well,
right?
Now you got a two-shot lead. And, you know, but let's look back. I mean, one of the best guys I've met doing this over 23 years is Kenny Perry. And Kenny Perry birdied 16 at Augusta in 2008. He's got a two-shot lead with two holes to play. And I was just, like, so excited. I'm like, oh, my gosh, Kenny, at his age, I think he was, like, 47. I mean, he would have been, I think, the oldest major winner. He was right up there, 45 maybe. He was right close to Jack, and he's got two holes, 17 and 18. You can par those, and he bogeys 17, and then he bogeys 18 and gets in a playoff, and Angel Cabrera ends up beating him in a playoff. And I just remember, like, oh my gosh, golf is so cruel and so freaking hard sometimes that two shot leads, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean anything. Golf's hard, and I thought Pereira handled himself. I mean, the fact that he stood afterwards and gave interviews and kind of even chuckled a little bit, you know, I think he gained a lot of fans, and Zalatoris the same way. I thought they both handled it with class.
You know, I was actually thinking about that. You know, we talk about the NBA and the NFL, and sometimes these guys get fined if they don't do interviews post-game and stuff like that. Is there any kind of media obligation that these guys are forced to do? Or could he have just said, no, man, I just blew a major championship. I'm out. I don't want to talk to anybody.
Yeah, that's what Rory did. Rory just said nope and left. And you can do that. There's no contractual media obligations other than the winner, I'm sure. That would be unprecedented. Besides that, I don't know any professional golfer that doesn't enjoy the opportunity to talk about winning. So, that's probably never going to happen where the winner declined. But it's, you know, yeah, there's no obligation. He didn't have to do that. It's a tough situation to stand there. And, you know, you could just see it, right, when he, you know, he's in the water and it's like, okay, he's got to get up and down. He can still get up and down for par and win. That was a crazy thing. He could still, he takes the drop. He's hitting three. If he pulls some shot up there, he still wins. And then it, you know, he misses it, chips it across, and they're like, that's not going to stop. And I thought it was really telling what Faldo and they were talking about, where he didn't go up to look at the way that it falls off just past the hole. And that's what got him. The ball didn't stop when he thought it would, and then it just kept going off the green. Now he's putting from off the green to make the playoff, and, you know, there was, like, no chance he makes that. So, man, it was heartbreaking. But I guess that's sports. And in the meantime, JT on the 72nd hole, that shot, he carved that 8-iron up in there. What a great drive, mm-hmm. And then carving that 8-iron to about 10 feet. Didn't make the birdie, but it was good enough to get into the playoff. But that was some clutch stuff, man.
Speaking of Rory McIlroy, where did things go wrong for him? Because it really felt like in the closing moments, I thought, oh, here comes Rory.
You know, I don't know. I honestly don't know. I mean, he opens with a 65. And you're thinking, okay, Rory, you know, this could be it. And he liked the golf course. He was on the right side of the draw, you know, which they talked about. JT was on the wrong side of the draw. He had the toughest conditions all the way through. And you're thinking, here goes Rory. And he went backwards pretty much the rest of the way. And I don't know, man. It's a head scratcher. He hasn't won a major since 2014. I mean, after he wins at Valhalla in 2014 at the PGA Championship, and he was driving the ball better than maybe anybody in the history of golf. And you just thought, this kid can't miss. How many more is he going to win? I can't even think that you would find anyone to put money on him not winning another major for 8 years. And who knows, and counting, right? So I don't know, man. It's like when he's on, I don't know if there's anybody better. And when he's not, it's just a head scratcher. So, I mean, Dustin Johnson's faded away. We haven't seen much from him, but he's not the biggest head scratch. Rory, to me, is just I just don't get it, man. That's strange.
So, Justin Thomas picks up the championship. Just how impressed were you with how he was able to handle himself down the stretch?
Yeah, you know, I mean, he gave a lot of credit to his caddy, you know, Jim Bones McKay, who was Phil's guy for so long. And I thought that was pretty cool to hear that the Bones basically gave him a little therapy session on the range following the third round. And he just said, you can't get so down, you know. I think JT is a little fiery and he's really hard on himself. And Bones just said, look, man, you can't be so hard on yourself. You just got to go out there and play. And he credited that conversation he said, there's no way I would have been here holding the trophy if it wasn't for that. So I thought that was cool that he gave some credit to Bones for that. But then he went out there, and I don't know how you would do this, but he says he didn't look at a board the whole day. He started 7 shots back and never looked at a board. And he said by the time he got to 12 and he made that birdie putt, he kind of got the tingles and the shiver, you know, went through the spine, and the way the crowd roared, he felt like, you know what, I must be somewhere in it. I don't know where, but that felt significant. And I'm just like, how do you not know? But at the end of the day in golf, you can't control, you can't play defense. There's nothing you can do about what the other guys are doing. And so he just kept his head down. And when, you know, going back to my first comment where guys were hitting it all over the place, I mean, yipping putts and chips and driving it all over 2 fairways over. And I'm just like scratching my head going, what am I watching? There's JT just hitting shot after shot after shot. And he outclassed those other guys. He really did. In my opinion, the way he played. And then once I got to the playoff, it just felt like, you know, here's a guy that's won 14 times and has a major under his belt. Zalatoris is still looking for his first. And that putting stroke is just still too shaky for me, what Zalatoris has. And so I felt like it was JT's all the way. But I was impressed with him. I think this is going to be big for him. He's now a 2-time major winner and has 15 wins on tour, and he's still 29 years old. So pretty great stuff ahead for JT, I would think.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was 3 blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.
Well, I don't know if there's need for a Tiger Woods question, but I always feel like there's a need for a Tiger Woods question anytime he participates in a major. And we saw kind of it was a tough exit for Tiger. I think you came on maybe it was Bob on Friday, but you were talking about it as well, what he needed to do to make the cut. He makes the cut, but he falls out of this tournament. Just kind of walk us through the Tiger Woods situation and give us your thought on what we should look for Tiger in the upcoming majors.
Yeah, I thought JT had some pretty strong comments in support of Tiger. Of course, they're really close friends, like family kind of. But I was on with Jake on Friday, and I told Jake at the Masters, he's like, BT, Tiger's not making the cut. And I'm like, he's absolutely making the cut. There is no chance Tiger doesn't make the cut at Augusta. I'm like, he doesn't go through all this.
He's never missed the cut at Augusta. He's making the cut, and he does, right? And he has a terrible weekend. So while I'm on with Jake on Friday, I go, Jake, I'm going to give you – I'm not very confident the Tiger's going to make the cut today, just so you know. Not like at Augusta. But he was gutty, man. I mean, that – and JT said afterwards, you know, that was just – what was the word he used? Not ridiculous, but something like that. So just a word like ridiculous. Like, you don't even know how crazy it is that with everything he's been through for him to make the cut in these first two major championships. And a lot of top-ranked players weren't playing the weekend, and Tiger was. Now, obviously, the cold weather got to him. He wasn't able to recover as well, and he was hurting. I'm guessing his back was hurting him as well, as the leg. And so he withdrew. And by the way, and I tweeted this out, I was totally fine with it. I know there's probably going to be some people that would say, hey, you know what, don't quit. Now, Tiger's never withdrawn from a major championship, ever. And I think anyone that watches and sees what he went through and how he played just to get to the weekend and what that means for the fans. I mean, I was out there, and when Tiger's on the golf course, it's different. And so what he no one's making him. He's not under any contracts to play, not getting paid to be out there. He is just, you know, he's doing it for himself. He wants to prove that he can do it. And it's part of the process of getting back to hopefully a position where he actually can compete. And it's playing out on the biggest stages and the brightest lights. But I'm fine with him withdrawing. He wasn't going to accomplish anything on Sunday. He had nothing to prove, and so he withdrew. So where does he go from here? He's not committed, although he put his application in. So he's registered to play in the U.S. Open next month, but he has never said anything about playing it. He has verbally committed to playing at St. Andrews for the 150th Open Championship, where he's won twice. That's the flattest golf course you could ever ask for, which is good for the walk, but it could be cold, which is not good for him. So I'm not sure if we'll see him at the country club at Brookline in Boston, outside Boston, next month or not. We'll wait and see what he thinks. But I think this is, he's probably a couple of years, right? But I think he's going to keep pushing himself and hopefully get himself in a physical position where he's still mentally Tiger Woods. His physical conditioning will allow him to have the stamina to go out there. I mean, I wouldn't put it past him to contend for another championship one day.
Is it just a matter of trying to get, you know, giving that time for that to heal up? And do you feel like that he'll, I mean, obviously you think he'll compete for another major and have a chance to win one. So you believe that the health will eventually get there, correct?
Yeah, he says that, I mean, at the Masters, he talked a lot about the leg, and the doctors told him he can't hurt it. He can't hurt it worse than it already is. But as far as range of motion, it's not going to get any better. The only thing that's going to get better is the pain. And yeah, that's just going to take time. So right now he's strengthening the muscles within the leg, and obviously the muscles attaching to that part that'll hold it better and give him some more stability and some more stamina. That's the only thing that's going to get better. And I'll be honest, he said at the beginning of the week last week that he felt way better than Augusta. And watching him, even in the first round, he had a little bit of quick in his step. Like, I thought, hey. And it was super hot, though. I mean, it was so hot. And it's amazing that it changed to be so cold. That's crazy. Oklahoma's maybe got a little Utah in it. But I thought for a minute, like, maybe he really is back. And then it went all downhill. Like, I thought his second round, he looked way worse than he did, even on the weekend at Augusta. So something happened, and it wasn't good for him. So, again, wishing him the best. I think everybody should just, you know, hopefully golf fans just appreciate the effort he's making and celebrate the chance to watch him, even if he's barely making cuts.
BT, just in case we don't get you back on air before the LIV tees off coming up here early June, do we see Phil Mickelson tee off in their opening event?
Wow. You know, that's the big question. That's, you know, other than the golf, that's, and maybe even above the golf, that's the biggest storyline this year is, you know, Phil's, you know, involvement and his fall from grace and what will happen with this tour. So, again, we still have not heard anything. I would have to think, given all that's gone on, he's showing up and probably isn't showing up until then. And that's going to be big. And then, yeah. So I do think we'll see him there. And it's going to be crazy. One of my BBC colleagues, I talked to him last week at Tulsa, and I said, you're going to be there in London? He's like, yeah. He goes, unless they don't give me credentials based on some of the things I've written lately. And I said, well, if you're there, I need to connect with you. I want to get you on the show. So we'll be covering that. That'll be a massive story. So, yeah, hopefully we'll be on and we'll chat with you leading up to that week if we know some more.
Well, I mean, I don't think you come back from that if you're Phil. I mean, that makes you full out villain. I mean, it's like when when Hulk Hogan went NWO. Like, I mean, it's like you don't come back from that.
Oh, that's an ender.
Yeah,
I agree. He's already obviously done some damage by architecting the competition, and then the things that he said about the tour. But he also said those things about the Saudis. So he sort of cut the bridge off of both ends, and he's sort of kind of dangling in the middle. It'll be interesting to see. My guess is, I mean, the speculation, the rumor mill is that he's probably already accepted money from the Saudis for this thing. And so he's got to see it through to be able to get the rest of it. And, you know, the speculation as to whether he has money issues or whether he doesn't, I don't know. That's just the discussion. But if that's the case, I think he's got to fulfill his obligation and be there. And I don't know, what does the tour do? Does the tour actually ban a guy, Phil Mickelson, the, you know, second most popular player of a generation? And, you know, that's going to be a tough one, but that's good. But stay tuned, right? Stay tuned. We'll find out.
Is the thing even visible? That might be the one thing he could get away with is, are we even going to be able to watch this LIV, this live tour?
Probably on Twitter or something.
Yeah, like a right? Facebook streaming or an Instagram live or what? I don't even know what they're doing to present this to America.
Yeah, they don't have a broadcast contract, and one of the executives they'd hired in November, I don't know if you heard this story last week, he was worked with ESPN as an executive and was in the marketing and advertising and Formula One and kind of a big dog, and he left. He resigned last week, presumably over Greg Norman's really, you know, inconsiderate and tone-deaf comments that he made. So anyway, so he's out. I would have guessed that would have been a pretty big opportunity for LIV to get something done with a guy like that, and he's gone. So, yeah, right now, I don't know. I suppose there'll be some streaming of it somewhere. But, you know, again, regardless of whether we're watching it or not, which I'm not sure how good the golf's going to be, it's the act, and that's what's going to affect Phil and his legacy and when we see him next.
BT, you're the best, man. We appreciate it. And looking forward to chatting a little U.S. Open and British coming up here in the next couple months.
Thanks, Brian.
Rolling on. Good to be with you, boys.
All right, man.
You got it. Brian Taylor, Real Golf Radio, here on the Zone Sports Network.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent. It was senseless, and I will never understand it. I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.